Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to my beautiful planet Earth. I want to welcome you to It's All About You, the radio program that is celebrating life, prosperity, and unlimited potential. And I'm your host, I'm Darian Marshall, and I want to welcome you. It's Monday, and I'm always excited about Mondays because I get a chance to do my show. Now, today, we have returning guest, Jalaja Boenheim. And she was on before talking about The Sacred Ego, that beautiful book she wrote, Making Peace with Ourselves and Our World. But today we're going to talk about Aphrodite's daughters. In fact, if you saw the description on the website, we're going to be talking about women's sexual stories and the journey of the soul and the connection between women's sexuality and their spiritual growth. Seems like it's a mix-up there, but as we go through the show, you will understand exactly what we're talking about. So I'm going to welcome you to the show, Jalaja. How are you today?
Thank you, Darian. It's a joy to be back again.
Oh, it is. I love your voice. You're just so soothing and relaxing. It's just great. It helps me to relax on my side. Well, congratulations on this book. Now, this isn't your new book, is it? It's been out before?
Yeah, this is an older book that I still get letters all the time from women about, even though it has been out for years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those books, I think, it touches on a topic that is so important.
Yes.
And so rarely really uncovered that when women read these stories, they just go, oh, my God, that is me.
Mm-hmm. What was the inspiration behind writing a book like this, Aphrodite's Daughters?
Well, you know, I went to India in my late 20s to study Indian temple dance. Mm-hmm. And I had just seen performances and fallen in love with this just gorgeous kind of dance. But really, I knew very little about it. So then, as you know, as I was learning and I was living in India, people would take me to these temples. And I'm sure you've seen the pictures. There's these incredibly erotic, sensual statues that just surround the temples. And, I mean, it's something you would never see in a, you know, in a Christian church. Very sexual, very erotic. And I would ask about these, you know, what is this about? And I would get these very evasive answers. And I began to realize that, you know, when the British came to India, they brought a lot of Victorian shame and repression with them. So today, a lot of Indians, even dancers themselves, are not really willing to divulge the truth about who the temple dancers were. And so gradually I began to understand that these temple dancers were not only dancers, but they were sexual priestesses. And they lived in the temple. They were considered married to God, which is interesting because, you know, a nun in the Christian tradition is also described as married to God. But in the case of a nun, it means celibacy.
Mm.
Now, for these Indian temple dancers, what it meant was that their sexuality was considered sacred because of their communion with the divine. And so for a man, it was a great honor to make love to a temple priestess.
I see.
And there was also, you know, you have to see it in the context of Hindu mythology. Because in their creation myth, the whole universe is born out of the lovemaking of God and goddess. That's the origin of all that is. So sexuality is really seen as the primordial creative energy. And, You know, after really entering into this tradition and learning so much about it, I came to the United States and I started wondering. You know, I thought, well, in our culture, usually sexuality and spirituality are seen as so separate. And when I looked at the books that were out there, you know, they were all about how to have better sex, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to know was, what were women's actual experiences? Did women have a sense of sacredness in their sexuality? And in general, how did being, living in a female body, how did that affect their spiritual journey?
Mm-hmm.
So I began to gather stories. And as you know, Darian, I lead circle gatherings. So in these circle gatherings, women will also tell stories that are very, you know, very intimate, that they might not share elsewhere. And I began to realize how important these stories are. And so I started meeting with women, and I would spend 2 whole days with each woman. And she would tell her entire life story from that perspective of how did being in a female body affect her spiritual journey. And so there are stories about childbirth, which for many women is really a very sacred experience. There are also stories about healing from sexual abuse. There are stories about falling in love. You know, all these different aspects of our sexual journey. And it became so clear that these stories are gems. And we need to share them.
Yes.
Because so often we hold them in isolation. And there is a lot of shame. There is a lot of ignorance as well.
Now, in your, like I said, the gorgeous book, Aphrodite, now who is Aphrodite? Is she a goddess or a woman or?
Aphrodite was the Greek goddess of love and beauty and pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
So she was known as the golden goddess.
Mm-hmm.
She emerged from the ocean standing on a seashell. And when you look around the world, you'll see that in many traditions, they have similar goddesses, and they are always connected with the color gold, with sensuality, sexuality, pleasure, flowers, children. There's all these associations that you find all around the world.
So
yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Now, I thought when I first heard the name Aphrodite, I thought about aphrodisiac. Is that from that name?
Yes, it is.
Oh,
it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
Because for some reason, when I heard Aphrodite's Daughters, but and even when I told different friends that I would be doing a show based on the book called Aphrodite's Daughter, right away they said, ooh, what is that going to be about? You know, they already felt, you know.
Yeah. And see, in that Greek mythology, you also still see that union, that here is a goddess, a holy being, a sacred being, and yet she is a goddess of love.
I see.
So in our tradition, we have nothing like that.
No. It was funny you said earlier about the between the nuns who are married to God and what sexuality means for them. And to have the other women, they're married to God, but there's a whole different meaning behind it.
Exactly.
One is stay away from sex, don't go near it, it's bad. Where the other one, it's a whole different experience for them.
Yes, yes.
That's interesting. How is the book actually set up? Does Aphrodite tell the stories, or do the women speak up? How is it set up?
No, each chapter focuses on a certain issue and usually on one woman's stories, although many, many other stories are woven in. So there are several stories about what I call the sacred marriage. There are stories, as I mentioned, about healing, about giving birth, falling in love, overcoming shame. So all these different issues that we face. So the stories are told by the women themselves with my commentary.
Yes, yes.
And my point is really that we are Aphrodite's daughters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to really claim that with pride instead of seeing it as something shameful.
You know, the one story that stuck out is, I keep calling her Isabella in my head, but it's Isabel, the one that became a nun.
Yes.
Ooh, that was a very interesting story. I was wondering, when you were interviewing the different ladies, did any of the stories shock you, or were you just so ready for whatever they had to say?
Nothing shocked me. They
mm-hmm.
delighted me. And the variety, the amazing variety of stories was a delight. And it felt like such an honor and a privilege to be receiving these stories. And some of them were stories that women had never told.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that in itself felt like a sacred trust.
Because I love the fact that a lot of them, some of them who had never had sex before, when they experienced it, instead of running off into shame, somehow they were awakened and felt closer to God and saw God in a whole different way. Can you talk a little bit about that? I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, I think even though our culture does not support this union of sexuality and spirituality, it happens very naturally and very spontaneously for a lot of women. And it makes sense when you understand that, the life force, which in India is called the Kundalini, runs through the center of our body.
Mm-hmm.
And in sex, that life force is awakened. And according to many traditions, the awakening of that life force leads to enlightenment. That life force runs through our entire body up to the crown chakra. So there is a very natural, I think, experience, first of all, of life force, just pure life force, of creativity, of love. There are so many different aspects to it. And when you look at people's encounters with the divine, there is always this aspect that one is encountering something that is greater than oneself. So in it, there is a loss of control. You know, that's inherent in the encounter with God, that we are not in control. And so that is something that, in good lovemaking, people experience that sense of the ego self, the small self, dissolving into something bigger.
Very good. If you're just tuning in, I'm having a conversation with Jalaja Bonheim, and she's author of the book Aphrodite's Daughters, Women's Sexual Stories and the Journey of the Soul. I know you touched on this earlier when you in your introduction, Jalaja, but these women that are telling their stories, are they just telling juicy stories just for the sake of it, or is there a purpose behind what they're telling? And I know you touched on it, but I figured I'd just ask directly.
Yeah. No, there really is this sense of a spiritual unfolding that, you know, the act of telling one's story is very important. And in our culture, I think we don't have enough opportunity to really tell our stories. Because in the telling of one's story, you rediscover it and you realize its true meaning in ways that you might not have seen before. So as women were telling these stories, they were beginning to see how their evolutionary journey was so entwined with their sexuality, their relationships, their marriages. It all contributed to their awakening. And sometimes even negative experiences. You know, it wasn't always positive experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were women who told me about how the journey of needing to heal from sexual abuse had really brought them to a place of deep spiritual awakening.
Wow. This is a pretty deep subject. You mentioned earlier when we started the show that you're involved with something called circle work.
Yes.
Yeah, can you touch on that some more? Did you create that? Where did that come from?
Yes, circle work is the particular way of working with circle gatherings that I created.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people have always worked with circle gatherings, and there are many different ways and forms to do that. But this specific way that I teach, called circle work, is really about the art of creating sanctuary spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So we really create a field of energy in the circle that is so safe and so sacred that very naturally a blossoming happens and the soul rises to the surface. And whatever people need in the way of healing or insight begins to happen. And the process is not just verbal. You know, we are working very much with the body. So we are dancing. There might be practices with touch or with voice or with breath. So the body, I really do believe that our spiritual journey unfolds through the body, and that it is really essential that we not disconnect from our bodies,
mm-hmm.
but that we actually turn to them as guides on our spiritual journey.
Well, why do you think it's important for, I was going to say women, but people in general, to be able to speak about these experiences and just let it out freely like that, especially in a group like that? I think it's great.
I think it's absolutely crucial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we hold our stories alone, first of all, there's often shame,
mm-hmm. yep.
Which dissolves when we share it and we realize, oh, other people have had the same issue or the same experience. The other thing that begins to happen, though, is that we realize that we are on a collective journey. Because for the last 4,000 years, we have lived in a patriarchal culture. And one important aspect of that culture is that it has denied the sacredness of sexuality, of nature, of the physical world. It has said spirit is transcendent. So when you look at indigenous cultures or more goddess-oriented cultures, you see that they don't have that split. They believe that everything is spirit, including the body. So I think that we're living in very exciting times today because more and more people are waking up and saying, wait a minute, we need to hold nature sacred. And if we do not, we are going to destroy her and we are going to destroy ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it goes way beyond our personal relationships, our personal sexuality. It really is so entwined with everything that is happening on our planet today in terms of realizing that we need to respect nature, that we need to hold nature sacred. And so in this telling of our stories, we begin to feel that, oh, we are part of this river of transformation and healing that is happening today. And it's very exciting.
You know, and there's something that popped in my mind as we're talking about the sexuality and the spirit and all of that. It's funny how even when I see us as humans, it's as if something deep within us, we know it's okay and it's spiritual. It's like, see, one day I was walking by, there's a little, I can't think of the name of the shop, but it's a shop, you know, they have all kinds of exotic underwear and candles and perfumes and things. And you see people, you know, lifting up their coat collars and putting on big glasses. They run in there, and then you see them come out like, like spies, you know. And it's kind of funny to sit and watch this thing happen.
Yeah.
But it's funny how we really don't, we're not worried about God and angels and all that looking at us while we do all this stuff. It's always the other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like someone we may know, they may see us coming out. But no, God's watching us the whole time. We don't care. We're just buying the stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Our biggest fear.
And I believe that all this shame has really warped our sexuality.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because when you put that kind of shame on a person, their sexuality becomes stunted.
Mm-hmm.
And relationships suffer because people can't communicate honestly and openly.
Yeah.
You know, and I see it here. I see it even more so in, you know, when I work, as you know, I work in the Middle East with Jewish and Palestinian women. And I've worked with women from Afghanistan and so on. And they've told me when they, you know, they were married, they hardly knew each other. They were told nothing about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, well, what kind of relationships are these going to be? Where people can't communicate openly, where they feel ashamed, where they can't speak about their desires. You know, it's simply not healthy. And then you see things that are happening, like the molestation scandals within the Catholic Church, where, you know, priests are celibate. Now, celibacy can be a wonderful thing if it is freely chosen.
Right.
But if it is imposed, if we are told that that is the prerequisite of dedicating one's life to spirit, it is so unhealthy.
It's amazing. I had a little, a couple of years ago, a little life coaching session with someone, and she was raised in a religion where you had to, you know, you wait till you were married before you had sex and all that. Then she got married, and, you know, I was telling her, well, you know, you could swing from the chandeliers now if you want. You're married. What are you worried about? But she really, it was certain things she just could not bring herself to do because she felt it was wrong and it was too creepy and shameful. And I, it took me a while to really understand where she was coming from because I said, you know, you're married. Do what you want now. But she said she still feels funny after all of that.
Yeah, because, you know, we internalize those messages. They're not just coming from outside, then they're coming from within us.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. It's mentioned that this book is a must read, excuse me, for every man and woman on the spiritual path. How can a man benefit from hearing stories from women about sexual experience and spirituality?
Well, I think there's a lot of very important messages that come through very strongly. One of the messages I kept hearing from women over and over was that for them, sexuality was not just about the physical aspect, but that there was an energy aspect to it. And that they wanted their partners to slow down and really tune in. It's like that more meditative aspect of it. It, for women, I think it's very, very important. And I think that the way that sexuality is usually portrayed in the media, in this culture, is not at all attuned to what women want. You know, so I think that it comes through very strongly in women's stories that they want a kind of deep attunement, of a real, you know, alignment with their partner. And just the physical aspect for them is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting to me because I interviewed quite a few older women. And the story in our culture is very much that after menopause, women are no longer sexual, they're not attractive, they're not interested in sex anymore. And what I heard was a whole different story. And what I heard was that their sexuality had changed. And the old way of having sex as a genital, physical thing, it just was boring to them. It was like they'd been there, done that. That wasn't what they wanted. But it wasn't that they weren't sexual. Like I remember this one, you know, some of the women I asked them, well, what do you think sex is? And I remember this woman saying to me, sex is the light that streams from the body. You know, I would get these senses like that that made it so clear that their understanding of sex was so far beyond what we are taught and shown in our culture.
Very
and I think
good.
That's very important for men to understand.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I can see how that could really help in a relationship. My goodness. I noticed on, oh my goodness, time is flying. I noticed on one of your, I'm hopping all over the place because you do so many wonderful things. On one of your websites, you're standing in a group, but you have a group of children, boys and girls, different races. Is that some type of dance group, or was that also another workshop you were doing?
Yes, that was actually a dance performance, and it was celebrating the coming together of Jews and Arabs in different cultures. This was in New York City.
I see.
And so I was introducing these beautiful children who were doing a dance performance.
I think
that dance is, you know, it's not coincidental that these sexual priestesses were also dancers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that aliveness in the body. And I think it is so important to encourage that and to celebrate that.
That's interesting. Even today, we still have exotic dancers. They're dancing, shaking around, you know, at different clubs and all. It's just interesting that still goes on. It's a different context, but still, they still do the. They may not have a veil on, but slowly take things off as they dance and tease.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, you know, instead of just coming out jumping on somebody, they have the music. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, I think it's that movement of the energy through the body.
Mm-hmm.
That becomes visible in dance.
Yes.
You know?
Well, we are down to like 30 seconds. Can you believe it? My goodness. You know, at the time, I knew it was going to fly like this with you. I said, man, I hope I get a chance to ask everything I can. The book is called Aphrodite's Daughters, Women's Sexual Stories and the Journey of the Soul. And I'm telling you, men, you can read it and learn a lot from it. Because the stories are really good. I'm telling you that, for some reason, that nun story just sticks out in my head. Because, you know, all my life I always had this thing about nuns. I lived in a neighborhood, Germantown in Philadelphia, and had a lot of Catholic churches in that area. So growing up, it was nothing to see nuns just going up and down the street, throughout the day. But it was just something about them, dedicating their whole life to something that just made them shine. But then to hear this other side with Isabel's story.
Yes.
It really opened my eyes.
You'll never see them in the same way.
I'm right. But like you were saying earlier, celibacy is beautiful if that's what you choose to do with your life, but when it's forced upon you, it can cause some other things to come up.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you for joining me today. This was really a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Darian.
And I want to, can you give me your websites? Now, do you have two?
Yes, there are two. If people would like to know more about my books and workshops and circles and so on, they can go to sacredego.com. And then I have a nonprofit organization dedicated to circle gatherings. And if they want to know more about that and the work I do in the Middle East with Jewish and Palestinian women, the best place to go is circleswork.org.
Terrific. Okay, there you go. Really quick, I have to ask, because I'm a big fan of book covers. Did you choose the cover for this book? This is, I like this. It looks like she's dancing.
I did not, but I love it. Love that cover. Yes, they did a great job.
They really did.
Yeah, I have to thank the publishers for that.
It definitely says it all for the entire book. I love it. It's beautiful. Okay, so you've been listening to us all about you, the radio program that celebrates life, prosperity, and unlimited potential. I'm your host. I'm Darian Marshall. And my guest today was Jalaja Bonhein, author of the book Aphrodite's Daughters, Women's Sexual Stories and the Journey of the Soul. And I look forward to being with you next week. Excuse me, I'm getting over a cold. I look forward to being with you next week at So It Is.